We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Touchdown, Colorado!
From Learfield, this is the CU Buffs Insider. Here's the voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Buffs Insider, our weekly podcast for University of Colorado Athletics. I'm voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. Joined here for a few minutes by one of the Buffs greats, Jeremy Bloom, who's working television on Saturday for the Colorado football game, the home opener with Texas State. See, that's the way they work it. Guys that look like that work TV. Guys that sound like this, we work radio. That's the way it works out. How are you enjoying this media thing?
But I would gladly take your voice. I can't do all the inflections that you do.
It's kind of fun, though, right? Yeah. Coach Barnett always says what's great about working in the booth is you never lose a game.
Yeah, that's right. You're kind of undefeated. Although, you know, at times we look foolish with our projections. But no, it's good to be back in Boulder. You know, spent a few years living outside of the state, just moved back, building a house here in Boulder. So I can't wait to get back full time.
Oh, it's good to have Jeremy Bloom back in the area. What did you see from the Buffaloes last week in that 17-3 win over Colorado State?
Well, I think the first thing that stands out is the defense. You know, I think they played with a chip on their shoulder. I think they were sick of hearing, hey, you know, you're going to be the Achilles heel of this Colorado team, you know, replacing nine starters, all these types of things. I thought they, for the most part, played lights out. You know, Colorado State, I was at the game against Oregon State when they put up 57 points. That's a good offense. And sure, there were some penalties, sure, there were some mistakes, those types of things. But to hold an offense that has as many playmakers as they had to 3 points when you're replacing nine new starters is a win.
Well, without question. And you think about it, that CSU offense, if memory serves, I think it put up 40 or more points in 6 of 7 games, including the Oregon State game. So awful impressive for the Buffaloes. That chip on the shoulder you talk about, defenses kind of have to play that way, don't they?
You have to. You know, you have to play with an attitude and a sense of urgency. And I think some of the criticism of the past, I'm going back, you know, 3, 4, 5 years when it was tough times here at CU, was that the defense was soft and, you know, they were scared to tackle, those types of things. So, you know, CU is a place where you have to come and you have to play with an attitude. You have to play with a chip on your shoulder, and they showed that against Colorado State.
All right, let me ask you about the 500-pound gorilla in the room, that being the talk afterward about, and you were a receiver, so the pass interference penalties out there, the Pac-12 has come out and said that all of those calls are just fine. The referees call it like they were supposed to. It seemed last week, Jeremy, as we saw that across college football, a lot of offensive and defensive pass interferences. It's kind of a byproduct of, I guess, the emphasis this year, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we knew about that coming in. Coaches knew about it. You know, the referees talked about it preseason that this was going to be an emphasis. And you know, during the game, I tried to look at it being non-biased, you know, as an analyst, as much as I could. And There was all elements of pass interference on those calls, the illegal hands to the face. You could call all of those, and I thought they were the accurate call. Do those always get called? Are we used to, as football fans, seeing all of those called? Absolutely not. But by definition, impeding the routes, pushing off, those types of things happened, and Pac-12 kind of backed that up, saying that they were all the right calls.
You know, we had Mike Pritchard on the broadcast last week working sidelines, and as a receiver, he was talking about, listen, there are tricks, and you know this, you did it. There are tricks that you can do as a receiver. You never want to extend. You can use an elbow a little bit. So there are some things where you can kind of blur the line a little bit, can't you?
Oh, absolutely, and you're taught to blur the line a little bit because that's just kind of normal football. I think what's going to be interesting to see in week three for some teams, week two for others, is how does it impact the game? You know, I think everyone around the country is looking at the receiver position a little bit differently now. And if I'm a receivers coach, not only at Colorado, but at any school, I'm telling my receivers, hey, make sure that we're not doing anything blatantly because the refs are going to call it.
Do you guys as players get a kind of gauge it early? You get a sense of it to how a game's going to be called so that maybe you can adjust as a game unfolds?
It's like a boxing match in a sense, but more so with the defensive back that you're going against. You're kind of gauging his ability in bump. You're gauging his ability in zone. You're looking at his hips. You're looking at tendencies. And then you're going back to your coach and saying, hey, you know, his hips are turning on the inside every time we do play action fake. Let's do a double move. You know, you look for those types of things.
Let me ask you about this receiving core the Buffs have. There are many around the country who have said it's one of the top, you know, three, four, five receiving cores in America. How do you see these guys?
I love fast receivers. And so I you know, I was at practice today just looking at, I mean, there's like 10 of them that can run and play. And I'm just smiling. You know, what a great job Shiverini has done and Coach Mack getting a lot of talented receivers here. And it's an exciting brand of football. I love the spread offense. I love throwing the football down the field. I think Steven Montez has all the ability to be a great one. He's got some immature tendencies that he needs to probably work himself out of. But sure. But I'm a big fan of his and bullish on his career.
When you have a group of receivers, really, or in any position, in any meeting room like that, it's got to raise the level of play, doesn't it? Because there's so much competition.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about the NFL. It's like, you know, every NFL draft, they get draft more talent. And if the team takes a receiver in the second round, first round, you say, gosh, I got to elevate my game. You immediately got the football field and start working on drills. And so, you know, talent elevates talent, and they certainly have a bunch of it here.
Buffs great. Jeremy Bloom joining us. He's working television on Saturday for the Buffs home opener against Texas State at Folsom Field. Noon is the kickoff. Our coverage on the Colorado Football Network is underway at 10 a.m. Back to Steven Montez a little bit. You said he's got all the tools. As you watch him, maybe there's some rawness there. But, boy, you'd like to think what Brian Lindgren can do with him, kind of molding him. He could be something special, couldn't he?
I love watching him play. I loved watching him last year against Oregon, and I was just so impressed with his ability and maturity as a young guy. And just watching him at practice, looking at his technique, and looking at the ball. I mean, as a receiver, those are the types of footballs you want to catch. Real tight spiral, quick with the delivery and the release. I think his ceiling is incredibly high. You know, a couple of knocks are, you know, does he take football seriously enough? He likes to joke around, which is great. You want to keep an offense light and a team light, but at the same time, you want to show that you're going to sweep every corner. You know, you're looking at every detail, and you want to be able to have that trust in your quarterback that he's staying late after practice and he's leading this offense. So that's one of the, you know, question marks. And the other is, can he step in the pocket? You know, in that blitz, can he step into the pocket and deliver the football downfield? He's got a little bit of a tendency to scramble outside. But again, I think those are all things that Coach Lindgren and the offensive coaching staff here can work out.
Is that process of pocket manipulation, pocket presence, is that a learned skill?
Well, I think it's a little bit of a learned skill, and it's just a little bit of a mentality of not being afraid to take a hit. You know, I think if you're a quarterback, and I'm not saying Steven is at all, but if you're worried about, you know, taking a hit, you're probably more likely to scramble. But the other thing is, when you're fast like Steven, you're used to in high school being able to scramble all the time because you're much faster than the defensive ends. Well, at this level, those DNs are pretty fast. So, you know, you have to change some of your mechanics.
When you've got that gunslinger attitude, that we use that term all the time with quarterbacks, do you like that in a quarterback?
I love it. It's that Brett Favre mentality. You know, that sometimes I'm gonna shovel it if I'm getting tackled. I'm gonna make creative plays happen, but there's a fine line, and sometimes Brett Favre and all these creative quarterbacks, you know, they blur that fine line of how much is too much, because I know the coaching staff, they told me they really want Steven to play with inside the offense, and maybe reduce some of the creativity. Just just slightly so that he's not carrying the bus and pulling it and pushing it, but he's simply just driving it.
Well, isn't there kind of a fine line, too, with a young guy? Maybe when he's a fifth-year senior, you allow a little bit more creativity. But at this stage of his career, first-year starter, maybe you want to control him a little bit more. Is that a correct statement?
I think that's a really good point. And I think that that's what the coaching staff is trying to do, is really build the strong foundation of that technique. And that ability, so that he'll have that, and then he can kind of go out and be Brett Favre when he wants to.
You know, speaking of special players, the Buffs have got one in Isaiah Oliver. I mean, he made that play last week against Gallup in the end zone. That skinny post was spectacular. How would you attack him as a corner?
Gosh, he looks the part. This is the first time I saw him in person today at practice. He is long, and he is athletic, and he is fast. He's got really long arms, so immediately as a receiver, I'm thinking he's going to be hard to get off of bump man coverage because he's going to put his hands on you. Then I'm watching him run, and he looks like a gazelle. I mean, really, truly, the kid has special, special ability. And, of course, I watched the game last week against Colorado State. He played exceptionally well against a very good receiver. And then on the other side, number eight, I think he showed up a lot as well. And, you know, they targeted him quite a bit, Trey
Udofia.
And he had some closing speed. Remember that pass he knocked down? And that was really at a critical time in that game, too. I felt like Colorado State might be gaining some momentum. They throw a deep pass. The guy looks wide open. Trey comes out of nowhere. So, you know, they're just continuing on in the tradition of a great and talented secondary for the Buffs.
You know, and I think it says something about Trey Udofia, what we didn't know about him. We knew he had all the physical measurables. But at that position, as you well know, and I think maybe cornerback and quarterback are the two where they're going to feast on you. They're going to come at you. And we didn't know if he'd respond, and he did. And I think that says something about the young guy.
That, in the addition to having a short memory, you know, he gave up some plays early in the game. And, you know, those types of things can mess with your psychology, and it can, you know, reduce your confidence. But it didn't for him. He just got more confident as the game went on.
And the other thing, going back to that game last week, that was nearly 74,000 out there. The last time we had a crowd that big, I think you were playing for the Colorado Buffaloes. It was nice to see the showdown have some meaning again, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, I did the color for the Oregon State game last week, and, you know, I was bummed that I couldn't be in Denver for that game. 73,000 people, you know, brought back a lot of great memories. You know, my freshman year in 2002 was a sellout. Of course, the Buffs were coming off of a Big 12 championship. Yeah. And then my sophomore year, it was another sellout. And really, you know, we played Florida State in Tallahassee. Of course, we went to, you know, Oklahoma. But my favorite memories from playing here were always against Colorado State, the in-state rivalry. It really is a special game.
Now, and remind Buffs fans here, the Lightning game was one of the showdowns that you were in, right?
It was. Yeah, we had an hour lightning delay or something. And that was my sophomore year, so we had to go inside and relax a little bit but come out. But it was this kind of eerie night, you know, real foggy and rainy. It was a great night for football. And we won, so.
Even better. Hey, take us back. You said, you know, the showdown, obviously special memories. When you think back, and you had some great plays during the course of your career, what stands out? When you think about your Colorado football career, and obviously at the end of it, the Olympic stuff was going on and all that that kind of messed with it. But what do you think about your football career here?
You know, I just feel so lucky, you know, to have the opportunity to play. Colorado was the only school that offered me a scholarship. So if it wasn't for Coach Barnett, and if it wasn't for the coaching staff and this great school and institution, I wouldn't have had a chance to play college football, and I probably would have just been a skier. So I'm humbled every time I come back. I tell Coach Barnett every time I come, thank you, you know, for the school and, you know, believing in me. But you know, you think about the people as you reflect upon your career and the fans who you know, had my back against the NCAA when that whole thing happened. And it's just, this is my favorite town in the world.
Do you look back on how the rules have changed? I mean, it might be an overstatement to say, well, Jeremy Bloom's Kurt Flood. Maybe that's an overstatement. But you helped kind of craft things and change the world of college athletics for guys who are dual sport athletes, haven't you?
Well, I think a lot of people have. Yeah. And if I could be a small part in contributing to that, then I feel pretty lucky. But it's not where it needs to be. You still have a lot of kids that come from not a lot of economic backgrounds who their parents still can't watch them play football. And, you know, they can't afford to live at the college. But yet, you know, we all know the revenue is in the billions. Sure. Now. And so I think that there's still some work to do at the NCAA level. But it has been nice to see some of the modernization over the past, you know, 10 years.
Well, and I think based on what you just said, I think I know where your opinion is going to come from. So where do you exactly do you fall on the it's time to start compensating college athletes?
Well, I think the first thing you need to take away is limiting their ability to monetize other areas of their life. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to write a book, if you want to write a song, if you want to, you know, do other things in college, because, you know, football shouldn't define you, or basketball shouldn't define you. You should be able to, you know, make money for other skills that you have. As far as making money, look, I mean, the NCAA takes 4% of every dollar that comes in. That's close to $1 billion, you know, just that 4%. So I think you could reallocate that money to student athletes and put it in some trust funds for, you know, student athletes that graduate and those types of things. And, of course, there's always going to be, an unfair balance between the revenue-making sports and the non-revenue-making sports. But guess what? We're supposed to prepare kids for life after school, and that's the real world. So, you know, if you have a skill set that's more monetizable than another, you're going to make more money at it. And so I don't think college should be any different.
Speaking of a skill set after football, you've been doing quite well. Bring us up to date on what's going on with you in the business world. Seems like everything you touch turns to gold out there, for goodness sakes.
Well, you know, I started Integrate, which is a software company, 7 years ago now. Mm. And a couple hundred employees, and the company's doing really, really well. And I love it because I get to be the head coach. I get to be a player. I get to be the owner. I get to, you know, do all the things. And there's a lot of aspects that I learned through sports that I take into building a culture and a company. So I love that aspect of it. And Wish of a Lifetime, my nonprofit that grants wishes to the oldest people in our country, the coolest people in the country. And we're just so lucky to hang out with a lot of centenarians and World War II veterans and, you know, make their dreams come true. So between the two of those and a little bit of college football and Olympic stuff on the side, I feel very lucky.
As a guy that is getting more aged by the moment, thank you for taking care of all of us.
Yeah, you got several years before you qualify.
So. Hey, before the season's over, at some point, you got to sneak on by the broadcast booth, one of our games, and just give us a few Gary Barnett stories. Will you do that at some point?
I would love to, because I got a lot of them. I got a lot of dirt on Coach Barnett.
Love to hear that. Hey, have a good broadcast on Saturday.
Thanks. Go Buffs.
Always good to catch up with one of the Buffs greats. This one, Jeremy Bloom, of course, will be on the television broadcast for the Pac-12 on Saturday. Buffs and Texas State transitioning now. Moving over, talk a little soccer. And head coach Danny Sanchez from the CU women's soccer team joining us. Off to a fantastic start. 4-0-2 on the season. Big road trip down in Texas this weekend against Texas and UTSA. But, Danny, you got to be tickled with the way your team has started the season.
So far, so good. I mean, the two draws, if we're going to really nitpick, might be a little disappointed. But a real good performance on Monday against a very good BYU squad.
Take us through defensively. I mean, you've got that six-match streak going right now. What is it, almost 608 minutes or whatever it is of shutout. What's going well? What are you doing defensively?
Well, we got two very good goalkeepers, so it all starts there. So with JJ and Scout, so it starts there. But we have a lot of returners in the back, players that play a lot of minutes over the last few years. And then we had Hannah Cardenas, a freshman who's been rock solid, is, you know, arguably our top defender so far this season. So I think that's the key. Like I told the team, I mean, sometimes you play really well and you give up a cheap goal, and sometimes you're a little fortunate to hit the bar a few times. So it goes in waves, but I think big picture, we're not giving up a lot of quality opportunities, especially on Monday. It's a very dangerous BYU squad. So far, so good, but we got some big challenges coming up.
Did you kind of have a sense this was going to be a good defensive team?
Well, with the players we had coming back, you know, we lost Michaela Krause, we lost Kalia Hogg, but we had everyone else back that played a lot of minutes last year. And like I said, you had a very good freshman in there as well. And then these Kelsey and Aaron Greening and Alex Vidger and Joss, who's really having her best season as a senior as a Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Week 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So we had some good players coming back, so we felt good about it. But really, it starts in goal, and we have a lot of experience and quality there.
I think when you talk football and basketball, I know that the defense in those sports has got an attitude. You got to play with an attitude. Is it the same in soccer?
Yeah, it is. It's not as separated as in football. It's almost like a separate team to a certain extent, even though it's the same team. But really, the defending starts from up top. And with where we're at, our attacking players have to defend, and they have to dictate the tempo of when we're going to press, when we're going to drop in. So it really starts with them. And I've been really pleased with our defending in the midfield. So the backs and the goalkeepers sometimes get a lot of the credit, but really, for us, it has to be 11 players.
I know early in the season you were wanting the offense to start coming around. It certainly has. What's kind of clicked there on that end?
Well, it's been a little hot and cold, a little disappointing on Saturday with Northridge, but they packed it in, and we knew BYU would be a more open game. That's really the type of teams we see. The games are open, they're end-to-end, so there's going to be you're going to give up more opportunities, but you're going to get more opportunities versus a team that has 11 players packed in 40 yards from the goal. So it's going to be by committee. Obviously, we have a couple players that are out this season that'll be very good for us in the future. But Tatum Barton had a great game on Monday. Marty Pukatapa had a great game the previous Sunday. So, and obviously, we always have Taylor Korniak. And Becca Rasmussen has been fantastic the last couple games. So it's going to be by committee. And it's the toughest thing to do is to score. So we don't care who they come from as long as somebody gets one in.
This weekend, you got a heck of a test coming up. You've got Texas on Saturday, UTSA on Sunday. I beg your pardon, Friday and Sunday. So a big test coming up. Give us a thought or two about these matches.
Well, Texas 5-0, Big 12, and if you were a stereotype, they're athletic, they're big, they're strong. Not unlike BYU, but at their place, undefeated, and obviously we're top 25 team coming in. So I expect an end-to-end match. There'll be opportunities going for both ways, and then Texas San Antonio has been kind of up and down. They played a very strong schedule, including teams like TCU and Baylor. So they played a really tough schedule, but at their place on a Sunday night when it's hot, and this is our first true road trip of the season, so we're going to need to be ready to go.
All right, looking forward to it. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, that'll wrap up the Buffs Insider Podcast this week. Our thanks to Jeremy Bloom joining us, getting ready for the Buffs and Texas State on Saturday, home opener. Again, our coverage in the Colorado Football Network gets underway at 10 a.m. with the Buffalo Stampede, and then the kickoff between the Buffs and the Bobcats at 12 noon. Also, our thanks to Danny Sanchez. Good luck to see you women's soccer team this weekend as well. I'm voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson. We'll talk to you next week on the Buffs Insider.